someone to help me. I'm gonna need somebody's hand.
I do need someone to help me.
I'm gonna need.
This is Sandy Williams sitting in for Earl Ingram this morning.
I'm gonna need someone.
And I'm gonna need someone to help me. Now, Earl's not going to be with us this morning. He's busily at work with his Voice of the Elders program that he so courageously started in Milwaukee. And so it's me this morning, Connor.
Hi, Sandy.
How are you?
I'm doing all right.
Who was that? Is that Nathaniel Ratliff we got going here?
Ratliff in the
Ratliff. Oh, yeah, you got it right. And this morning I've got a special guest, Scott. Scott's called in, I think, once or twice. And at the end of the call, he identified himself with his last name, and I figured out who it was. This is Scott Williams, which I coincidentally has the last same name as I do. How are you, Scott?
I'm doing pretty well this morning.
Scott is my third oldest child.
It was pretty tight there. But
it was tight. You were like 5 minutes younger than your brother?
If you met us both, it might seem more, but just a few minutes.
Yeah. So I got a pack of boys that I've raised, and Scott's sort of he's a lead dog.
Well, I mean, I'll be curious to hear how you define that.
I'm not going to define it.
Let's not go there.
No. So but this morning, you know, it's a beautiful day, and the Packers have training camp, don't they?
It's happening. It's here, finally.
Yeah. So, you know, I've been opening, like, the internet social media constantly has stuff carried about, you know, the Packers could do this trade, they could do that. And the news media itself makes up news every day. Like, this could be news. They could be trading, and then it's like Aaron Rodgers could be retiring. But now we've got real news happening, right? I mean, we've got stuff coming out, or is it real news yet? It's still just speculation.
I mean, you know, the clickbait right now that you're seeing is about Aaron Rodgers and, you know, his dabbling in psychedelics for his own mental health. There's been articles all over the internet.
Yeah.
And I mean, so talk about clickbait.
Yeah.
You know, we're not, I think camp, and he's talking about our fourth round wide receiver, things like that. And that's interesting as a Packer fan. But, you know, I don't know that there's like really real Packer news coming out yet.
Well, yes, there is. Like a couple of days ago, he talked about his tattoo.
What he wore to his slow motion white t-shirt moment going into the camp with the hair throw.
Being Nicolas Cage.
Yeah. He aced it.
He does like clicks. I think his life is now, he measures his days by the number of clicks that he can accumulate.
Let's not get carried away.
Oh, okay. Is that too derogatory about Aaron?
I don't know. It's just we've never met the guy.
That's true. We shouldn't make judgments about somebody without knowing him.
It's pretty American of us to sit this far away and having never met the man. And
yeah, but he wants us to do this.
He might like it.
Yeah, I think so. So, and then you know, there's another thing. I mean, not football. You know more about football than I do. But then baseball, which I know very little about. But this guy, Hader, was the big-time stopper, whatever that means for the...
I think you mean closer?
Closer, oh, yeah.
Big stopper. Stopper's like what we use in chemistry class.
Stopper is what you put in the top of a flask.
Yeah, when you want to swirl the chemical.
Yeah, okay, so he's a closer.
He's a closer.
Yeah, and we traded him, even though he was a big-time closer. So, I mean, wow.
It's going to be an intense amount of money to keep him.
Uh-huh.
And I think, too, you know, we talked on the ride down, he's 28, which it shouldn't be old, and it's not, even in baseball, really. However, you sign that next big contract, you look at Bakhtiari with the Packers, talk about injury risk. I think that seems at some point when you have a player who's that high of a value, you can get as many players as we did for him. You know, you bring that in and hope that equates to future wins.
Ah, so we got a bunch of guys for him.
A bunch.
Yeah, but did you know the names of any of them before?
I mean, I follow hockey more than I probably follow pro baseball, but I did read about that trade.
Hockey. There's something happening in hockey. There's going to be a big-time hockey game here in Milwaukee, right? Pfizer Forum?
Yeah. Blackhawks are coming up to fight the Wild, and anybody that cheers for the Blackhawks is going to get a lot of choice words from me.
And the Wild is, where are they from? Minnesota.
They're from Minnesota.
Uh-huh. So, yeah. But why don't we have hockey in Milwaukee? Oh, we do. We have the Admirals?
Yeah. Well, we tried, right? I mean, the Pettit Center was built Bradley Center was built, I think, originally by the family to try to draw an NHL team. And then when the Whalers moved, I can't remember which city, that was kind of, we were dead in the water after that because of market research that the NHL's done.
That we aren't much of a market?
We wouldn't have enough pull.
Well, that's a sad thing. So this morning, I thought we could talk about a variety of things. Scott, you're a teacher, right?
I am.
Yeah. And I think you mentioned on the way up, out here that there was some big thing happening in Texas with respect to teachers and not enough of them or some such thing.
It's not just Texas.
Why, isn't Texas been short on education for a long time?
That's a loaded question, Sandy.
It's real loaded. Man.
Yeah. Well, come on, man.
Yeah.
You just pissed off half our audience.
Yeah. Like, well, come on.
Are we heard in Texas?
He's trying to draw me off path and get me, you know.
We've got the antenna going really strong now. We're in Austin and we're in Dallas.
Yeah, better. No. If we're in Austin, we're fine, probably.
Yeah, that's what I'm hoping for, Austin. That's the audience I'm talking to. So anyway, what's happening in Texas?
But, I mean, teacher shortage, right? I mean, so the numbers coming out of Texas was the article I saw, but it's obviously not limited to Texas. There's states all over that are reducing the requirements necessary for people to get into education and be teachers. And it's teachers that are sounding the alarm, which as a fellow teacher, that's probably the most alarming thing to me is that, you know, I don't know that that's usually a role teachers play, but, you know, having to aggressively identify that we have a definite shortage of people that are experienced and ready to take lead in a classroom. You know, we're talking about tens of thousands in individual, you know, states, even in Texas. That's why the story out of Texas was.
We have a bit of a shortage in Wisconsin, don't we?
Not a bit. MPS has a shortage every year. They have emergency certification they've been using for years to try to fill positions.
So why the shortage? I mean, teachers don't get paid enough. Is that part of it? Is that all of it? Or what is it?
Do you live in a warm cave without any connection to the media outlets in the world? Or?
Well, I'm trying to ask open questions here. When you're the questioner, you act dumb, which is what I'm doing right now.
Johnny Carson, you need a coffee.
Everyone knows you're smart, Sandy.
It's too late, Sandy.
How am I doing?
Yeah. Everybody knows.
So tell me.
Look, being a teacher, like the pay, there's always been the issue of pay. And so, you know, that's a conversation that can extend well beyond like other current things. But I think the biggest thing overall is that during the pandemic and the antagonistic relationship that developed surrounding platforms of learning, whether it be fully virtual and then kids are falling behind and things like that. You combine that with now the creation of a boogeyman through CRT and a national narrative and aggressive dialogue and red meat throwing by politicians, it's taken a field that was already challenging and underpaid, and it's created one that is, even socially like precarious. You know, to talk about being a teacher, I've been talked to at supermarkets. I've been talked to.
People talk to you at supermarkets?
People will approach me knowing I'm a teacher and extend and attempt to have a conversation with me. I've had it at a person's party. People want to talk about, you know, how woke is your school district? I mean, just things like that. And as a teacher,
what do they mean? How woke is your school district? What are we talking?
I mean, woke is one of these. I guess if you watch Tucker Carlson, you understand exactly what I mean. I don't watch Tucker Carlson. I just read things that I have to be close enough to the sun so that I don't. You know,
woke is really code for, is it a liberal? Is it a?
It's a whole. Yeah, it's a whole pack.
A stacked liberal education, right?
It's a trigger word, and you can attach whatever negative connotation you want to it.
Yeah, right.
So it's my understanding.
Yeah. Woke is use your imagination. If you don't like it, it's woke.
Yes, I'll agree with that.
Yeah. So, and you're experiencing that here in Wisconsin. I mean, the same kinds of things that teachers in Wisconsin are feeling, all the same stuff as in Texas.
Absolutely. I think, I think there's two, the most recent things that have been heavily traumatic to me personally would be that changing in the platforms in learning as a teacher, where we were going from, you know, in-person instruction exclusively, then we went to fully virtual, then we went to a hybrid model, and then we did some combination of those two things. And if any teacher in any district, I mean, there were teachers in districts who were so underfunded and didn't have enough Chromebooks and computers to even attempt to try to keep kids caught up. But for us, for the rest of us, it became professionally challenging to try to work within those different paradigms. And now the narrative that's been created about, you know, socially about teaching and teachers.
So, I mean, after the break, I think we want to talk about why. I mean, I can't figure out why the political right has decided to make public education in particular, sort of a red meat sort of an issue for themselves. I can't figure it out. You know, is it because inner city kids all go to public schools and so we've decided to sort of paste all that together? Or I can't. It's hard for me to focus on, and maybe you as a victim of it have some insight. But for me, it's difficult for me to understand how it is that public education in particular has become the object of attack.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think a lot of conservatives that I've met just don't like public schooling in general, and they prefer homeschooling. So, like, any type of way that they can straw man public schooling in general.
But I mean,
they try to.
Do they not like public schools because of what is taught in the public schools? Is it because, I mean, my sense is that schooling and that teachers have this rap attached to them by conservatives that they're all essentially liberals and they're infecting the kids with liberal outlooks.
Yeah. I think it's because a lot of the time, like, conservatives tend to teach like a very like pro, let's say, very nationalistic version of history.
Yeah.
And it's not necessarily wrong in a lot of cases, but in a lot of public schools, they try to teach like a more of a diversified, more liberal. They teach things about like intersectionalism and such. They try to make it so kids can understand more about different protected statuses and things throughout history. And a lot of people just think that to be woke, you know, like learning about the plight of Black America in the 50s is like, that's woke, you know,
agreed.
But understanding that is how you can put a lot of contemporary issues in context. Right.
Well, I mean, I like the question that we used to ask high school students when I taught them, like when you study, you know, the Roaring Twenties is the class's dialogue about that decade. But if you talk about, you know, the Jim Crow, like the Great Migration, and, you know, when you talk about it, even just the name for it, the Great Migration, sounds like something pretty awesome, right? But in fact, you know, were those people refugees running from economic and social persecution, or was this in fact a voluntary relocation of people who were given an option that was superior to the one they were, their conditions they were living in? And if you look back historically through primary source documents, it's abundantly clear they didn't anticipate the violence or the racism and violence would be just as virulent in the North.
Exactly.
And if you don't have that conversation with people and you just read the textbook, you wouldn't know it.
Yeah. So I guess we're going to a break. Mm-hmm. We'll be back.
Hands are shaking. Mugs are crawling all over me. Son of-